This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hey, this is Wavelength. My name is Ali Johan, discovering the sounds of Southeast Asia. And this week on the program, I get an exclusive with one of Malaysia's most revered artists, Dato' M. Nasir. It's a big one for me. M. Nasir, of course, active since 1979 in the music industry until today. Got his first success with his band Kembara in the early 80s, spanning 7 studio albums, and then venturing out solo, producing 6 studio albums, the big one being Canggung Mendonan in 1993. I had the opportunity to pick his brains a little bit and take a trip down memory lane with the journeyman himself, M. Nasir, touching on some of his musical milestones. Nasir first became active in the late 1970s with 2 little-known albums before he and his bandmate A. Ali formed Kembara, playing folk songs at the tail end of the Flower Power movement around the world. And after 7 studio albums with Kembara, the band dissolved and he produced what can be considered his breakout album in 1998, the aptly titled Solo. What were the considerations that you have to make when you went solo in terms of recording contracts and band-wise?
Well, the story was, I was into films at that time. After Kembara was quietly faded, you know, I was actually into making films. I want to make films, I want to be in films, the technicality of making films. And then I kind of left music for a while. But because Aziz Bakar, he knew me then, he got into a new company and they want to make albums, you know. So he called me. He called me, why don't I make an album? In fact, pushed me into making a solo album. So I guess it was agak 5 tahun. 5 years I was lay off music. But I do songwriting. I write for others, but not myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you started doing solo stuff, what was the clear thing to you? Things that you could do with your music that you could not do with a band like Kembara, for example?
The truth is, it's ever since, even in Kembara, I tried to fuse the East and West, but doing it in a style that is tasteful and you know. But because Kembara, it was like a band, and the sound, a band sound. When I got solo, I was kind of permitted or allowed to do my own thing. The things that thought I really wanted to do more, can express more. So I did solo. So the solo album was although I thought, when I look back at my what I did, and I thought that the climax of that kind of music was in the Canggung Mendonan album, but solo started it.
Yeah, and then you had Saudaga Mimpi, and you kept moving forward with this sound that was unlike any others.
Yeah.
How did you feel about your own music being sort of like an outsider almost to, you know, the normal pop music of the late 80s, you know, the more mainstream side of things? But you always stood in this space that did not have any sort of kindred spirits, for example. How did it feel like?
It is... you might think that I might feel like lonely or what. I think I felt I was a little bit special, so I was not afraid. Mm. I was not afraid because at the time it was time. But I knew, because I've been in the industry quite a while, and then I knew it won't last forever. People will go back to whatever pop music again. But I was sure that I want to make that change.
Did you find yourself relating to more of the rock bands of the late 80s and 90s?
Yeah, yeah. I try to not to be too with them. Yeah? But I tried to put myself in, he's also a rock kaki. Actually, I love rock, but I guess I wanted Malaysia to have a kind of own thing, own thing. Maybe it has a rock basis, tapi ada sound here. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what would be the elements, you think, that made it stand out?
Or? Well, the elements, I struggled, because I know it's not going to be like a traditional instrument or whatever. Although it made part of it, but the basis of songs and or the music is the rhythm and the scale. The other kinds of music from other tamadun, big tamadun, they have already done it. They've done it, and then they have influenced all the world already. And we haven't done much. We haven't really got to that point where we can say this is really ours, because our situation is such. We are a race that is influenced by all races, you know. So it's kind of difficult,
right?
Yeah.
And how do you feel about Western conventions in music?
If I say it's all right, it's all right. I mean, it's all right. I mean, it's there, and then there are good works, and then there are bad ones also. I love it. I was Westernized.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But your music of that time, Canggu Mendonan, and the music after that incorporated more asli sounds. Ada bunyi ghazal, ada bunyi keroncong, and that really encapsulated or even gave an identity to the Melayu sound. Would you think?
Melayu sound or Malaysia sound? Yeah, that was the purpose at the time. Yeah. Doa ku kau sejahtera, biar warna kubah-kubahmu kian pudar, untukmu setanggi ini ku bakar, cahayamu sediakala.
Nasir's experimentation in music saw him venture into a vast spectrum of sounds, from the traditional to the more progressive. And what set his music apart from the rest of the pool was his willingness to dig deeper into the origins of sounds. An example is his 1999 song Andalusia, which had a distinctively Middle Eastern flavor. You know, tracks like Ghazal Untuk Rabi'ah, of course you sang that with Jamal Abdillah, and Andalusia. Who do you look up to in these sorts of sounds, the more Arabic and Middle Eastern sounds?
When I look at the overall sound of the local music, the Malaysian music, or what, even the whole Nusantara music, they're very much influenced by the Arabs and the Indians. Yeah? Some Chinese, yeah. But in the 50s, the 50s, the 40s, the early years, they were very much influenced by Latin music. And Latin music is the influence of North African Arabic music, you know, the Spanish music and everything. So it goes, it went round. And then when the Portuguese came here and, you know, brought the rhythm and the music to us, and we got influenced by the Portuguese, the joget or the ronging, whatever, and the Arabs came and they brought the samra and the zapin and the masri, the rhythms, and they were strong. They have strong sound in their music, and in the Indians with the sarigama and things. We were back then we had simple music. Just simple sound, simple music with maybe not even enough scale, you know, the do-re-mi, you know. not even complete, and simple rhythms. But when they come and then they influence everything, the instruments, the music, even the thinking, so we cannot escape from them already.
And that is one, I think, one of the more important things about playing these types of music is the thinking. So it's one thing that we learn how to play it, but it's also how to think like them. When you're making music, obviously you wrote this and you had put thought into progressions and movements in your music. But then you have to present it to sort of like your live band.
The live band.
Right? What do you look for in live band members?
A good musicianship, the good musicianship and the vast knowledge of all kinds of music. That's good.
So did they have to understand what you were doing?
Yeah. Although I did struggle a lot because they are from like other genres, right? And you know, sometimes some of them they came from even club music and.
And very conventional.
Very conventional. Yeah, when asked to go into this, it is they might think that it is like, oh yeah, I played it before, and you know, we have our traditional stuff also, but those are like folk stuff. But this is, to me, it's different. It's different. Yeah, I'm also into folk stuff, but not simplistic folk.
Yeah, you made it more contemporary.
Contemporary and with a kind of a high level of thinking, that kind of thing.
Right. Mm. Can we still hear elements or influences of Pink Floyd, for example, in your later music?
I'm not sure because it might. You know, you might still listen to that to the influences. Because my son, he's got his band already, and then you know, he's got his music that is quite a big influence by the Pink Floyd. So I would not go there anymore. So let them do it.
On Wavelength this week, I speak to multidiscipline artist Dato' M. Nasir. A look back at some of the musical milestones of his decorated career, which is coming up to its 37th year in the local music industry this year. When we resume, our esteemed guest takes us back to his early days of learning music and also get his thoughts on the music that's coming out of the Nasir family with his four sons from psychedelic bands Peter Hati and Ramayan.
Suddenly, one of my sons, he was the drummer. He played the drums and I was like, I was quite shocked, but I didn't show, he played the drums very well.
Taking us there is a staple Kambara track from 1981. This is Hati Emas, Wavelength BFM 89.9.
Gembara, puas sudah.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to Wavelength, and on this week's program, I get an exclusive with Dato' M. Nasseh. Look into his life as a multidiscipline artist, the composer also known for his works as a poet, a painter, and a filmmaker. But first, we continued our chat about his children. He's got four boys who look set to continue the legacy, three of which form the band Pita Hati, and another one fronting the newly formed Ramayan. What were their earliest exposure to music through you?
You know, it was a mystery to me. I didn't know that they are into these things in music. I thought they were afraid to get into the music. But, you know, when they grew up, and suddenly one of my sons, he was the drummer, he played the drums, and I was quite shocked, but I didn't show, but he played the drums and very well. And he chose the kind of music, and he was not influenced by my kind of music. I don't know where he listened his records, and I don't know where he got his influence.
You mean
and
you don't share?
And especially Pink Floyd. But I did, well, tell them stories about all this, the big bands, you know. I don't know whether they got influence from that or not.
Okay, yeah. So what's your view on the music they make now?
You know, because I know the scene, and I feel, I don't know what I felt, actually, when I look back, it was in the genes.
It must be.
Like my father, he didn't know how did I struggle, but I kind of, I feel that I understand, and then I know that what they're gonna face, mm-hmm. in the struggle in music. Mm-hmm. But my parents didn't know how I struggled, because it was the life was quite far away from their kind of life.
Yeah.
But all they knew was my success. But I was so blessed, and I was nasib baik, really nasib baik, because my first outing was a success. You know,
it could have gone any other way.
Yeah.
Wow. Right.
You know.
Tapi having said that, you know, orang kata kemana nak tumpahnya kuah kalau tak ke nasi.
Yeah.
So how did you feel when you see Pita Hati play and Ramayan these days? How does it make you feel?
The other one, the Ramayan, I was another shock. Because when I listened to them, I asked, why Were you all not into R&Bs or pop music or whatever? So it's easier for me. But they played with an influence of Beatles and Alan Parsons ke apa ke. Ish, orang ni dengar apa ni, apa yang kau sang. You know, when I became like a professional person, so I'm into so many things. Like them now, they're into one thing. They want to do this kind of music, and that's it. Even if you ask, hey, why don't you make a pop single? Senang sikit, kita nak jual kat radio.
But see, that's Dato' M. Nasseh, the father, the protective father. But what does Dato' M. Nasseh, the musician, say and think?
But I'm going proud. I'm proud.
Looking at how his sons are carrying the torch forward with their music, I asked Nasseh about his early days getting into music in Singapore, where he grew up in the 60s and 70s.
Well, we listen to radio. The only music that we get is from radio. But I have my brother to thank, because he bought a lot of records. So I learned to know about many of the great recordings from my brother. The first time when he bought, I'm not sure, but I think it was a Queen record, but it was not the Bohemian Rhapsody. It was after that, the one that with the Big Bottom Girls, the Night Bicycle again. And he bought others. So he bought others, I listened to them. I listened to a lot of them. And then Oh, right, let me correct this. He bought Bob Dylan. It was a live recording of Bob Dylan performance songs like Lay Lady Lay or Maggie's Farm, apa tu semua kan. And I was hooked by the music. I never knew Dylan before. Before it was the Beatles lah, and some other 60s punya artists, 50s, many Malay punya recordings kan. And after that was history lah. I listened to a lot of our recordings that he bought. The thing is, he bought all the good ones. the best recordings. I mean, the best recording of the year, and one of my I'm very influenced to this record. The name of the artist is Al Stewart, The Year of the Cat, and I was hooked. But the surroundings, the environment I was living in, it was it's like a blues town. Like everybody was playing the blues. So I was also hooked on the blues. Well, some of the kids, they like to play heavy metal bands like Deep Purple, But my brother bought Led Zeppelin. He never buy Deep Purple. So Led Zeppelin. So it was different because Led Zeppelin and Deep Purple, it was different. And our education in listening to feel the difference between this kind of music and that kind of music, I got it from my brother.
And this was a time when Singapore had a lot of good bands as well, locally, the Swallows, the Rhythm Boys, A Ramli, the Hooks and stuff. Were you exposed to any of that?
I was exposed by that kind of, all those bands to radio. Radio really taught me a lot about the scene, the 60s, the early 70s. Yeah, the Swallows, the siapa lagi band 60-an ya, almost all. Radio memang peran besar.
And this was a time when bands would put out 45 RPM records and LPs right?
Yeah.
And something that we don't see a lot of today anymore. Let's take our attention to another band that I understand you were a big fan of, Pink Floyd.
Yeah, that's why dia pun beli Pink Floyd. So I thought it was the they just kena dengan I punya jiwa, you know.
Had you been playing music already at this time?
No, not really. Like I said, in the mid 70s I went to an art school. I was trained to be a painter. So not yet music, but I did some strumming, singing in my house, but not really serious in music.
So you got onto music much later after you graduated?
Yeah, because I mix around with musicians, and one of the biggest is Sweet Charity. I wrote on the earliest recordings, three songs I wrote for them. It was strange because I was so influenced by Pink Floyd, but I wrote songs for a hard rock band. So they tried to accommodate me. I don't know why, but the songs were in the B-side, so it's all right.
What is it about Pink Floyd's music that caught your attention?
It's not easy to put in a line or a word, but I was trained as a painter. And at the time, when I was into surrealism and those psychedelic things, so Pink Floyd came. So it's just like macam kena lah, you know. It has to do with the effect of the subconscious or something, yeah. And a psychedelic scene. It's because of that, yeah.
Right. Do you still paint these days?
I do, and I do it professionally.
Okay. Okay, so if there would have to be a ratio between making music and painting, what would it be in general?
I can't answer that because... it was like my every day. I woke up and then I tried to paint for an hour, and then I rest, and then I go to the office to make music, and then when I come back, I might paint again. So it's just like that, you know.
That's been your daily life.
Kind of lately, yeah.
Wow, wow, that's interesting. And you know, bands like Pink Floyd and even the Beatles, the later era Beatles when they started going psychedelic, banyak incorporate psychedelic art, and psychedelic art has to do a lot with colors and a lot of very subliminal messages.
Yeah, yeah.
And you could see that in cover albums by your band Kambara.
Yeah, yeah.
How could you relate that era in terms of album covers only, not the music for sure?
Oh, well, because I was influenced by that kind of music at the time. And when I was, I got opportunity to do an album. So we just put those ideas on the cover of the records, and even in the recordings.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like throw our ideas, you know, whether it hits the market or not, I don't know. But we did also some catchy tunes, so we were safe. But then, you know.
M. Nasir have composed and written words to about 2,000 songs to date for himself and many other esteemed rock bands like Sweet Charity, Search, Wings and The Alley Cats, to name a few. Of course, many of them turned out to be big hits, and you know, some lines in these hit songs just sticks in my mind, like the opening line to Search's Isabella or Fantasia Bulan Madu, Wings' Sejati, Alley Cats' Sekunto Mawar Merah. There's just some great examples there. So I get him to point out a couple of notable ones.
The thing is, it's not many songs that I thought was gonna be hits. This is a story. I did Fantasia Bulan Madu. It was a strange process because we got no last song to write. So we struggled with that song, and then we found a bit. And then we recorded. We did some arrangement, and we tried to do some arrangements, and then we go to the studio. We go into the studio unprepared, but we struggled, and then we did manage to record the song without even, you know, traditionally you have to have an intro, some kind of a 4-bar intro or 8 bars, but there was nothing.
Yeah, that song starts right off.
So, but there was accounting there. Yeah, what are we going to do? So there was the very earliest keyboard. I can't remember what's its name. It's one of those early keyboards, and there was this sound, you know, the touch thing, and sounds, you know. put that one in that, that one bar thing. And the engineer, they always knew that whether a song can be a hit or not. Only the third person, they know. But we, the ones that are creating it, won't know. Maybe know a little bit, but not so much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He said, you know, mark my word, this song is going to be a big hit. I was kind of afraid, you know, but it did.
Wow.
It became Fantasia Bulan Madu, yeah?
Yes. So then do you follow a formula of a hit song? You know, there's that formula that you...
Yeah, there's the formula. There's a structure. You know, like you watch a drama, there must be some kind of a structure.
Yeah.
Mm? And it is the flow of the perasaan manusia lah, macam gitu kan. After a while, kalau you tak... If there's nothing happening, people get bored, you know. Like 10 minutes ke apa, where is the story going ke apa kan.
Yeah.
So people get bored. Same goes with a song. But there's so many ways to make a song. You can catch them first, or you can make them follow. So, a formula? Yeah, a hit song is always the same.
Lyrics adalah salah satu hook yang paling strong dengan muzik Datuk.
Yeah.
Dari kembara ke muzik solo Datuk. Dan juga lyrics-lyrics yang Datuk dah tulis untuk all these other bands that you've worked with, Search. And they are, you know, that line in any of their popular songs, you straight away know, okay, that's a Search song, that's a Wings song.
Yeah.
But with kembara, there was a lot of puisi going on.
Yeah.
Do you write lyrics first before song or vice versa?
Vice versa.
Okay. Melody first.
Melody first, usually. But I do one of there are quite a few songs that I write with lyrics first.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody wrote lyrics first. You
appropriate it to a song.
Yeah, appropriate it with songs.
Okay.
The words are also the music, actually. Well, it's art. It's art. If you know art, you can know this is a bad one and this is not.
What's the process of going into lyric writing for you?
Well, sometimes the first line inside you have the lyrics already. Yeah, the things that you want to shout out, or you want to certain lyrics that you want to sing in the chorus, you have it already in your mind. And also you get inspired by the music itself. Like I said, subconsciously you have the things in it already, but it is difficult. You cannot explain, but in the end, it comes out in the song and the lyrics. For example, the song Mantra Samrapadi, it came out because of the song and the rhythm, the melody and rhythm, just makes you want to say that word, to sing that word. Mantra Samrapadi, you want to say that word because at least it's for me. For other people, maybe different, but I got inspired by the rhythm and the melody. And songs like some songs, the lyrics are written by others, and most of them I gave the title,
mm-hmm.
I gave the idea of the song when I produced the album or song. For example, one song, one pop song. It's so song is so melodious, and it was at a time I was like reading things, some books, some stories about things about history or about philosophy or what. Then the word came came out from my mouth, but I didn't write the story. But the word Isabella came out from my mouth.
Isabella.
my friend, the lyric writer, he wrote the lyrics. And I told him the story. Oh, the story is something like this. And he knew the story based on a real story or whatever, a book. So, macam lagu tu kena je lah, you know. That's why it's called a hit.
Wow. Working with Arwah Lolo,
yeah.
One of the most revered lyric writers, yeah. What was that working relationship like?
It was like a call away, or he's always there. Like, he's always excited. He's always, you know, if you knew him, he's always full of ideas. Lolo came from the same place where I came from. We are of the same age. But he knew the Beatles more. And in fact, when he was younger, he looked like John Lennon with the spectacles, the round spectacle. So he's always there. And he's always like excited to express, because he read a lot of books. But I don't know, only a quarter or maybe a little bit was expressed to the lyrics. Mm-hmm. He's an excited man. Mm-hmm.
So what would be the working process? Like, you would send him demos and then he would think about it?
I would say he was inspired by the music also. He always think of the words, the words that can inspire people, or a story. To the lyrics.
Mm. What is the importance of penguasaan bahasa tu, Datuk?
Very important. Very important, because we are talking about trying to sesuaikan dengan lagu, you know. Because the problem sometimes we don't think too much of the power of language. Mm-hmm. We got lost in the melody. You see, sometimes lyrics, when you baca, you read, it's funny. Because that's not quite good lah, kan? Tapi with the power of language, we can do that.
So when you're working with people, how do you position yourself when you write for somebody else?
Well, I'm just like a director of a firm. It depends on the story. It depends on the character, the actor. So if it's the actor, it's like that. The character of the in this case, the singer. So I would try to put myself in the head. Then I try to understand what can they do and what can they express, you know. But basically, most of them, they have rock in them. So it's easier.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So you speak the same language,
yeah,
almost.
Kind of, yeah.
But that means you had to get to know Amy, for example.
Yeah.
What about the music? How did people like Kate and Dane, or even Joe and you know, the bassist for Wings, I forget his name. Yeah. Did you have to do a lot of directing?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, I did a lot of directing. But they themselves, you know, individually, they have their own taste in music. They may be rockers and they like rock, but a certain kind of rock. But when it comes to making that album, they also compromise with the idea that we are going to execute. I mean, the album concept. In the early 80s, it was the glam rock sound. Mm-hmm. We try to be in at the time, you know. But we injected many. Other kinds of the individuality, you know. So to make an album, they can deliver. Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes I say I'm a professional composer. I make music for others to suit them.
Yeah.
But sometimes I don't. I make music that don't suit them. But they try. They try to deliver them. Whether I'm a musician or a composer, I think there's certain similarities, but yeah, it's different.
So that was my chat with one of Malaysia and Singapore's most revered singer, composer, poet and writer, Dato' M. Nasir, going back in time to look at his extremely decorated career in the arts world. He turns 60 next year, but in a candid exchange toward the end of the interview, here's what he had to say about his music going forward. You doing a lot of music these days, Sato?
I try. Yeah. I'm always in the studio strumming and trying to make another hit.
This has been Wavelength, discovering the life and music of Dato' M. Nasseh. If you miss any part of the program, you can head on to www.bfm.my/wavelength to download the podcast. I've been Ali Johan, and we're going to play out with an M. Nasseh classic, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Agar dapat ku ber
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.